Here's to getting back together, to planned lunches and unplanned cookouts, to grandma's recipes and smells that take us back, to passing down plates and traditions. Here's to warm embraces and familiar faces, to your best friends becoming best friends, to scheming, dreaming, and food still steaming. Here's to laughter and love, to growing closer than ever, for all of life's get-togethers. Chinette, here's to us.
Angie's List is now Angie, A-N-G-I, and caring for your home just got easier. Whether you need help with routine maintenance or a dream remodel, Angie makes it easy to see reviews, compare quotes, and connect with top local pros who can get the job done right. Plus, you could see upfront pricing and instantly book hundreds of projects. No phone tag, just the work you need done at a time that works for you. Angie's got your to-do list covered from start to finish. Book your next home project today at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, actress Dee Dee Pfeiffer talks about recovery.
Just because I'm a Pfeiffer doesn't mean I don't have addiction issues or trauma issues. I got them both. So long story short, I was very much a high-functioning alcoholic. Never went to work drinking or to school or, you know, I could maybe go out with you and have one or two glasses and make it look normal. That doesn't mean I didn't go home and the boys were sleeping and keep drinking, right? Especially if I was up late studying. It was like my best friend, that and a cigarette. Did not mean I wasn't slowly dying. And after my first year of college at UCLA, going to get my master's degree, it finally all just came to an end. You know what I mean? It's called the bottom. Yeah.
Today on the show, actress Dee Dee Pfeiffer talks about her life and recovery. Stay close.
Hi, my name is Dee Dee Pfeiffer, and you're listening to Story Worthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of over 11 years, or you're a new fan of Storyworthy, thank you so much for tuning in. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the show last week with comedian and writer Kathleen Rohl, who, by the way, she's known for that movie, Melvin Goes to Dinner. Do you remember that movie by any chance, Dee Dee?
Oh, girl, I don't remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Don't worry. I didn't remember either. But it was one of those, like a cult movie, like Dinner with Andre. It was kind of like that.
Oh,
but it
okay.
was Melvin Goes to Dinner. And it was, I think it was directed by Bob Odenkirk. And Jack Black was in it. And my guest last week, Kathleen Rohl. She's very, very funny. Anyway,
oh,
you guys,
that.
Last week she talked about doing a benefit for the criminally insane. Mm. And it is very funny. She thought that, you know, they were just insane people. She didn't know they were like criminals until, like, I don't know, she didn't put those words together. And then she gets there and like everybody's chained together and.
Right.
Which she kind of was happy about. But anyway, it was a really funny story.
Oh, I love that. That's something
back.
I would do totally. That's
yeah.
something I would totally do.
Yeah, she did not know what she was getting herself into.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep. I understand that.
Go back, you guys. Listen to Kathleen Rohl, but not now. Today, I have on the fantastic actress Dee Dee Pfeiffer, and she brings forth the topic recovery. Recovery with actress Dee Dee Pfeiffer. So this is exciting because... Well, we're going to learn about what kind of recovery she's talking about, first of all. But also, you know, before we started the show, Dee Dee, you were talking about that idea of being the identified problem in the family. And I was thinking to myself, is that the same as the black sheep?
Oh, yeah. I think they go hand in hand. Anybody who's been battling addiction at any point in their life or still are, understand. Mm-hmm. What it feels like. And they actually have a term in psychology called the identified problem in the family. You know,
that term, does it mean that it's somebody with an addiction, or could that mean somebody is an assaulter, or how would you say, a rapist, or you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. It's a broad, Yeah, it's a broad, yeah, for that. But they do use it in, say, rehabs and recovery, that when somebody has a disease, or you can have trauma, like you said, or just have like a criminal behavior, all of that. Whenever you're the black sheep, I think it's safe to say that you're the identified problem in the family. And then what happens is when you decide to finally deal with it and confront it, mm-hmm. and are actually in recovery, you don't even realize it, but you slip into the identified possibility. Yeah. Your title changes. And that to me is the exciting part.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That is exciting. Of course. Yeah. It's a new chance. It's a second chance. Yeah, for sure.
New chapter. Yeah,
for sure. But when you think about the identified problem in your circumstance, it was recovery. Uh-huh. But what are some of the other titles that they give family members?
Oh, you have the enabler. Oh, gosh, I'm about to get an F on. I just graduated. I can't remember.
What did you graduate in? Oh, you got a degree in social work.
Yeah, I took 10 years off to get a bachelor's in psych and then a master's in social work. And I went the community college route for 10 years and then got my butt into UCLA for my master's. And
wow.
So I took a 2-year degree, but I took a year off. It took me 3 years because I had to check out for a year and deal with my addiction. I had to deal with it because it was the biggest monkey on your back, because I was a high functioning alcoholic. There's a lot of us out there, high functioning meth heads, high functioning mm-hmm. sex addicts, high functioning blah, blah, you know, and we're hard to detect because we get the AIDS, we take care of our children, we check the boxes. I don't go to work, you know, drunk or to school drunk. So how can she, right? How can she be an addict? She checks all the boxes. I'll tell you why. Ask somebody in their addiction, they'll tell you they're slowly dying. And that's where I was.
God.
And right now, I'm slowly living.
Gosh.
And it's,
but
now I'm living, and it's so
this
exciting.
This is going to be a great story. I'm so excited. Now, I know your sister is Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes.
And do you guys have other siblings?
Yeah, I have an older brother and a younger sister.
Okay, so
there's there's four siblings in the Pfeiffer family. People don't know.
No, they don't know. Yeah. And who started acting first, you or your sister?
Michelle, for sure, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I see. It's interesting, you know, just that I'm trying to think how to say it. I mean, you're an actress. Right now you're on Big Sky, which is a fabulous show. It takes place in Montana. And mm-hmm. basically it's these two cops that are going up to find, is it siblings that took off or what is it? Somebody murdered somebody.
Yeah. A lot of people get killed in the Big Sky, girl. You pick and choose the night you watch it. And we invite these amazing guest stars on, amazing actors, and they either kill each other or we kill them. Or we invite you, but then we snuff you out. That's what I love about Big Sky. You never know what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
You're like the cliffhanger crazy show. The first season, we had two storylines. One was the two girls that went missing in the mountains
that's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, right. The CJ Box book. The second, like, bottleneck of the first season was the Klein Saucers, a real dysfunctional rich family, and they were they were dysfunctional on steroids.
Yeah.
And that was an ugly family. I mean, not physically ugly, but dysfunctional. Yeah. And then you have Ronald running around. He's just like that tick on the dog. He just won't, you can't get him.
Yeah.
Oh my God. But he's not a tick in real life. He's an amazing actor man. But Ronald is just actor man. I always mess with him. I love him. He's great. He's like this fantastic guy, and he plays the most horrible character.
So how is this your third season of Big Sky coming up now?
Yeah. As we speak, we are in New Mexico filming our second season. Whole new battery of actors and guest stars, but we still have some old ones. We still got me, Denise, and of course the two leads, Cassie and Jenny. We got Jerry. We got Lindor. No, that's his real name. Oh, no, Omar. Okay, Lindor.
And you play like one of the cops in the station. You're kind of sassy.
I'm the office manager,
kind of like manager.
Admin.
Right.
I'm Mama Bear. You know, mm-hmm. this is a crazy show. But when you go to Doolin Hoyt, you find Denise. And she's a breath of fresh air. And then she's also a smartass.
Well, also, you know, this is all put together by creator David Lynch, who's your brother-in-law. And
David E. Kelly, yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm, I meant to say that.
David E. Kelly. No, I meant to say David E. Kelly. But I'm just saying, you're coming from this person. All of his shows are like that.
Yeah.
I mean, he's very well known, you know, for this genre of being very dramatic and very exciting. And you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, he's not afraid of being naughty. He's not afraid of like ruffling your feathers a minute, you know, when you're watching a scene where you're a little uncomfortable, but then you can't turn it off.
Yeah.
I love that element. That's entertainment right there, if you ask me,
yeah,
right?
Where
you're like, you're really stirring up some stuff in me, and I'm not sure if I like it, but I can't turn it off.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like you have a blast.
I do, because I got to tell you, girl, I'm 57. I'm playing a younger girl. Denise mm-hmm. is 50. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love
yeah.
blasting that out there. And my friends are like, you're never going to get a date if you keep telling everybody you're 57. I'm like, well, that's their problem, not mine. but I love it that I'm in an industry where less than 1% of actors work at any time.
Yeah.
Then you throw in those of us in the seasoned population, the older population. That's the clinical nice way of saying it. I'm an old fart. And the very fact that I'm working at my age and having taken 10 years off to go get a degree. Wow. I mean, someone slapped me with the lucky stick, right?
Oh,
so there's a lot of great
so
moments.
Happy for you. Yeah, that's
yeah.
really nice. But the thing is they're always going to need some older actors. It's not like anybody ever quits the game, because if
yeah.
you get called to, you know, audition, you're going to go. So basically
mm-hmm.
you're looking for, like, when people die, you kind of move up the ladder. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
And how many roles are there? But I would think that
yeah.
there's more roles now than there have been in the past for females. I would think, because, you know, there's a lot more diversity in general going
yeah.
on. So I hope that some more females are getting cast. I'm not an actress, and I don't go out for those sorts of things. But I would hope that they're, you know, mixing it up.
I think now more than ever, because of the times that we're living in,
yeah.
I see everybody mixing it up, and that's really refreshing. And of course, it's about time. So that's
yeah.
really nice to see. We're mixing it up, man. Come on.
Yeah, finally,
you know?
Finally.
Yeah.
Hey, here's a question I have for you. When your sister was in Scarface, how old were you?
Oh my God, that's funny you say out of all the movies. It was Scarface when I was 17 years old in high school, about to graduate. And at this point, I had worked 1,000 jobs since I was like 9 or 10 years old or whatever, because back then child labor didn't exist, didn't need
right.
work permits. So I just
right.
worked, you know,
right.
because I wanted money,
I remember.
And my family didn't have. Yeah, you know, I would walk down the street and said, hey, can you totally abuse me for $5 a week? Absolutely.
Yeah, sure,
clear
sure,
those
sure.
tables at the Mexican restaurant. I was clearing those tables.
Yep, I get it.
So by the time I was graduating, I didn't know what I wanted to do. All my friends were going to college, and I didn't even know what that was. I was like, why would I do that when there's jobs to be had? But
mm-hmm.
I had worked 1,000 different kinds of jobs, danced in the Disneyland parade. Like I said, I bus tables. I did everything.
Yeah.
So she's over there acting in L.A. So I was like, hey, I think I want to try this acting thing. And she was like, okay, stop right there. Don't even think about an agent or a headshot. Just stop. Go get into a really good acting class first and see if it's something you even like. That
mm-hmm.
was the advice she gave me while doing Scarface. So I took my Volkswagen, my 66 Bug, and my stuffed monkey in my suitcase, and I drove up to L.A. and lived in her office.
Wow.
on her
Funny.
Couch.
Oh.
And and I went to Peggy Fury at the time, who was very expensive, which led me the job at the female oil and mud wrestlers job, where I was illegally cocktailing. Because again, you could do that back then and not get caught.
Yeah. Wait, what was the first job you said? Peggy and what? Or wait, what?
Oh, well, Peggy Fury is an acting coach back in the day. She was huge.
I see.
Huge.
Wow.
But she was really expensive.
Yeah.
So when I drove up there, my Volkswagen, I needed a job. So I had a friend who got me a job at, it's called the Hollywood Tropicana,
yeah.
female oil and mud wrestlers.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I was 18 and I sling drinks illegally because they kept asking for my driver's license. And I was like, oh yeah, I'll bring it tomorrow. I did that for a year.
Yeah.
Because back then you didn't have the ABC coming and saying, hey, how old's your cocktail waitress? She looks like she's 12.
So you're 18, you're slinging drinks at a wrestling pit.
Female oil and mud wrestling.
And
yeah.
then Scarface comes out?
Let's see. It came out when I was still working there. When I I worked there for a bit. Actually, I worked there till I was 21.
Wow.
Like literally.
A couple of years.
The day I turned 21, when I was actually legal to work there, I quit and put my cash caddy away. And at this point, I'd gotten an agent. I spent 2 years acting. Yeah. In a workshop, in Peggy's workshop, because I didn't know what I was doing. I was awful. I would turn red and stutter. I couldn't remember my lines. And everyone was like, what is this girl doing? Why is she in here? She's so bad. And I was a hard head, according to my father, and he's correct. I wasn't going to give it up until I could master it in some way. Well, it was painfully awful. And to this day, I really still think that I have not mastered it.
That's so interesting, because most people that go into acting really, really, really want it. And mm-hmm. they're really driven, and they have some skills. That's so interesting that you even did it at all.
Yeah. I wanted the skills, and I just didn't have them. So, you know what I mean?
But did you want them because your sister had them, or because you wanted to go to Hollywood?
No, because they were looking. Oh, I was already in Hollywood at that point. I moved up to my Volkswagen. But I think I wanted it to prove to them that I wasn't just awful, because it was painful for me to quit and have them go, yeah, man, she stinks. I wanted to show them I didn't stink.
Wow.
So I was like, I'm not giving up until I show them. And then in the process, I did fall in love with it. I love the idea of moving people when I could actually remember my lines and not stutter and turn red. When I actually understood character development, I realized how I could hide with another. And I love human behavior. I love that element.
People
watching. So when I started to blend them together, and with my training, especially Roy London, who years later really launched, I think, the way I looked at acting to a whole nother level. And I was able to niche out my own groove in an industry that was madly in love with my sister, still is. And everyone kept comparing me to her. And as long as they kept comparing me to her, I was going to fall short until I started to say, hey, I'm not Michelle. Yeah. I am Dee Dee. And I need you to get over that right now that I'm not her, and look at me for me and see if I'm right for the role.
Sure. And you do look a lot alike.
Thank you.
But I want to go back just for a minute. Uh-huh. Not now, but way back when. So you're in this place, you're cocktail waitressing in the mud pit. And then all of a sudden, your sister comes out in this movie.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to get at is that movie was pivotal. I mean, the movie was important, actually, you know, in terms of, now in cinematic history, just because it was so brutal and so crazy. And your sister was so specific and fantastic.
Yeah.
And when you saw her and then you're in the mud pit, what are you thinking?
The Pfeiffer girls, there's three of us. We're weird. We are not competitive. It's very strange. I think we should be. We're madly in love with each other as sisters. We really are like the Three Stooges. And we're very different as well. And we embrace how we're different. So Shell doing so well in that movie to me was like, I was so filled with so joy and happiness for her. But at the same time, remember, for some reason, probably because in real life, she didn't look like that character. She wasn't as recognizable. So it did not impact our family as much as Witches of Eastwick. That was honestly, I promise you, that was the movie that when we went to Kmart the day after it came out, people were pointing at her, screaming at her, running at her. And I was like, oh my God, that was scary. I was like, what that?
That is scary.
Yeah, it happened overnight, but not with Scarface. In the industry, yes, overnight Scarface did it for her. But when it comes to the public changing the Pfeiffer family, Witches of Eastwick, that was the movie that, we never turned back after that. After that, we were,
As her sister, when you saw her in Scarface, did you say to her afterward, why didn't you tell me this is what you've been working on? Were you kind of blown away, or was it just that was just another role?
I think, I'm trying to think, I was pretty young and, at that age, you're pretty self-centered. I hate to say, I really wasn't much in my sister's lane. I was in my own lane. I moved to LA. Yeah. I was very consumed with my own career, trying to launch it and watching her. For me, I was watching what she did and was trying to take her cues. I looked at her more as a mentor,
Great.
But then I realized years later that I was following somebody who had a different journey than mine, because I was really, my journey was different from the get-go. And I didn't realize that until Roy London showed me, sweetie, Michelle's over here. You're over here. I didn't say down here below her. I said over here. There's room for both of you in an industry.
Absolutely.
But you got to find out what your voice is first. And you have to tell this industry it's not her voice, not her journey, you know?
Sure.
And so I've always looked up to her as a mentor because I just think she's amazing. But remember, it's also my sister. I still think it's really weird to watch my sister on screen. I mean, she's talented to no end, but I know I see her acting.
I can imagine. Yeah. Just recently, I had on a New York City ballerina. She's a soloist, Georgina Paskogan, and she's from a family of six kids and from Altoona, Pennsylvania. I'm from Pittsburgh. So I was saying, Georgina, what do your brothers and sisters think that their sister is a prima ballerina, like for real, in the New York City ballet? What do they think? And she's like, they could care less.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't even faze them. And I'm like, yeah, but I guess I'm thinking to myself, like, if my sister were a prima ballerina, I'd be like going to New York. I'd be like taking my friends. I'd want to go backstage. But I guess it just, you just brush it off.
If it happened overnight, yes. But remember, and the family of the ballerina watched the years of progression, the years of getting there. We watched Shell go from a Max Factor commercial, no lines, to Fantasy Island, two words, who's that guy? You know, that was her first line. You know, and we all were crowded around the TV in Orange County. Remember, we didn't have VCRs or anything. So if you missed it, you sneezed.
You were dead.
You missed it. That was it. You were shadow like you never saw your sister. So it was like, shh, she's coming on. You know, who's that guy? Oh my God. You know what I mean? That's it. She's now an actress. She's on TV in Fantasy Island. She has two words. That's it. And then she did a commercial.
That is fantastic.
Yeah. So you see
so
this,
funny.
You see the baby steps.
I see what you're saying. That makes sense. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. So I didn't even know she was in London right now filming. What is she filming? She's filming something big, some big movie. Yeah. And I start talking to her. I was like, hey, we turned my hair red. I think it's a little funky. And she's like, oh, no, I like it. And I go, why are you going to sleep? And she's like, I'm in London. I said, oh, shoot, what are you doing? And she goes, I've been here for a month, you idiot. I go, well, how was I supposed to know? She goes, do you not talk to your other sister? I said, yeah, I was talking to her about how my eyelids are starting to droop. I'm like, what do you do about that other than plastic surgery? Or I start talking to her about my son who wants to test out early. I'm a chespie. I mean, this is the stuff we talk about, right? Or
sure,
my dog got skunked. Three times in the face the other night. That's what you talk about to your sister, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Of course.
Because then she says, how did your dog get her nose up the butt of a skunk? I'm like, don't even get me started on that. I left the gate open.
You crack me up.
You know what I mean? That's what we talk about.
Sure. No, I get it. I get it. It makes sense. Well, I'm thrilled that you're on Big Sky. That's a great show. Second season filming now.
Yes.
And the first episode's going up this week, late September. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be Thursday nights.
We have new night, Thursday night. So everybody remember Thursday night because last season we were Tuesday, 10 o'clock.
Yep.
And this season, I promise you, it's going to be just as crazy as the first season. It's just going to look a little different. We have a younger cast. We got a bunch of kids who get into trouble. So I just got chills. I just got chills. When you throw kids and we have animals and kids. So now Big Sky
it makes
really
it harder. It makes it harder to work, but then their hours are restricted. So you're only going to work like 8 hours that day, right?
Denise never leaves Doolin Hoyt. I have no idea. The kids, unless they come in Doolin Hoyt, it doesn't affect me.
I see. Oh, I see. Of course. I'm not thinking.
Yeah.
You're not in those scenes that the children are in. I see what you're saying.
But it would affect it. Yeah.
Is there a real town up there called Doolin Hoyt?
Oh, Doolin Hoyt. No,
Doolin Hoyt.
Doolin
Hoyt
Hoy are the two girls' last names. Jenny and Kathy's last name. No, it's okay. But we are in, this is crazy. First season, we were in Canada, making it look like Montana. Now we're in New Mexico, making it look like Montana. Movie magic, baby.
That is so funny. Yeah. That is so funny. All right. We're going to get your story in just about 2 seconds here. But first, I want to let everybody know that we're back at the Hollywood Improv playing Story Smash, the storytelling game show. And boy, Dee Dee, you would love that game. If you're ever in Los Angeles, make sure you let me know, because if it's on, you've got to come down. It's so funny.
Oh, I love that. I love improv.
We're having a blast. Yeah, we're having a blast. And Danny Zucker, Blanca Patch, Melissa Peter Melman, these guys are all playing every single month. So check out StorySmashShow.com for the next date coming. I'm telling you guys, it's so darn funny. Also, you can follow all the pictures on Instagram at StorySmash on Instagram. Yeah, that's it.
Excellent.
All right, you guys. Yeah, thanks. She's here right now. Dede Pfeiffer. Now, you are an actress, like we already said, and some people might remember you from the television series Sybil.
Mm-hmm.
You played her daughter.
I did.
You played the daughter, Rachel Robbins Blanders or something like that.
Exactly. I played the uptight one that was always pregnant and eating.
That's so funny. And then back in the 90s, you did a whole string of sitcoms, mm-hmm. including some of the biggest sitcoms like Seinfeld and Friends, Ellen, Wings. Then you were on the one-hour dramas as well, like CSI New York and Dream On. And then, and The Dead Zone. I like that show, The Dead Zone.
A lot of people love that show. Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
I love that. And then you posed for Playboy. Hooray! In 2002. That must have been fun. Was that a good experience?
I'm not sure. I would use the word fun. And speaking of recovery, let me just say champagne at 9 a.m. really helps you take your clothes off a little easier. Just a bunch of strangers. It was something I really wanted to do. I was trying to make a statement. I did it with a naked man of color. I was able to show my tattoos. It was all about being the wild Pfeiffer. For me, it was about breaking down color racial lines. At that time, I was on an interracial show. And I thought, if I'm going to show all of my stuff, I'm going to make a statement and one that I believe
in. Good on you.
That we're all beautiful people. And I love all the skin colors, you know? And
I love that.
That we're beautiful. And it was kind of nice to roll around with a beautiful
I
man.
Bet.
What a blast. That part was fun.
Did you go to a studio or did they come to your house and set up lights?
Well, my shoot was a little complicated. The actual shoot for the inside, which they do different than the cover, I had to do it two times. Yeah, the first time we did it in like this car in this abandoned area, and it was kind of raw and gritty, kind of cool, but Hef didn't like it. So they scratched all that, got a new model.
Wait a minute. Was it like a dirty car or did they clean the car?
No, not dirty. I meant more like textured and... like kind of more antique-y.
So did they have you on a car?
No, it was like in the back seat with a guy. He didn't like it at all. And then the outside, on the ground with the leaves and stuff. I mean, it was very naturistic and natural, which I love because I'm like, I'm earthy mama. But Hef did not like them, so we scratched all of those, got a new model, and then it went indoors in studio in a controlled environment. And then those are the ones you saw in the magazine.
Sure.
Now the cover I had to redo, I think three times. Yeah, I was naked a lot.
Sounds difficult.
It was, considering the time I was drinking, it was easier because of that, which is sad to say. I'm not sure if I could do that again sober, but that does not mean I'm not proud of my pictures, especially because I just think the human body is beautiful. You know, and we're all beautiful in our own ways. And it was also, I think, a way to kind of jerk people away from my sister and me because they kept always throwing her in. Every interview I had became more about her than me. So I was like, I'm just going to go naked and Playboy. That'll fix
it. Good on you.
Guess what? Then it was Michelle Pfeiffer's sister is naked in Playboy. I'm like, wait a minute. What does she have to do with me being butt ass naked in Playboy?
She's not out there.
She has nothing to do with this.
Oh, that makes me laugh so hard.
I know,
you're so
honestly,
funny.
But it just makes my sense of humor even more rich.
Oh, I love it. Well, listen, I took all my clothes off for my 50th birthday, and I rode naked on the back of a Harley.
Oh, I love it. That's something I would do.
You can see those pictures at ChristineBlackburn.com. There's the big photos up. Yeah, it said, this is 50.
I love it. For my 50, I had a game party with all my friends and told them to bring their kids and friends, and we all played games and they had to wear pajamas.
Oh,
and we
that's
danced
so much
to disco
fun.
And all the kids were in the room scared of us. We were just tearing up my little house, dancing to Madonna and Tears for Fears and all, you know, George Michael, all this stuff from the disco days. And they were like, you guys are crazy in our
that
pajamas.
Is a blast.
But I want to show what 50 looks like. 50 sexy, right? Good
absolutely.
For you.
Yeah. What
yeah.
the heck?
Yeah.
And so listen, also, I didn't find you anywhere on social media. Do you participate in any social media? It doesn't matter. I'm just wondering.
My boys allow me to do Instagram only.
Oh, How nice of them.
Yeah, well, and I only did it because the show. They asked all the actors to promote the show. So I got Instagram. I don't do Twitter. I think, it scares me.
So what is it on Insta? Where are you?
Dee Dee Pfeiffer Official.
There you go. At Dee Dee Pfeiffer Official. That's where we're going to find you.
Yeah.
All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for the very talented Dee Dee Pfeiffer.
My story is one that many share. I share this story with everybody. Just because I'm a Pfeiffer doesn't mean I don't have addiction issues or trauma issues. I got them both. And probably some other stuff that hasn't been diagnosed yet. So long story short, I was very much a high-functioning alcoholic. Never went to work drinking or to school or, with my kids and all of that. That's what would just title me as the high-functioning. Did not mean I wasn't slowly dying. And after my first year of college at UCLA, going to get my master's degree, it finally all just came to an end. You know what I mean? It's called the bottom. Yeah.
Yeah, you hit bottom. But let me ask you, so where were you drinking? If you're so high functioning, where was the alcohol at in your life?
Oh, at any bar that you could, any happier I could. But what happens is, I could maybe go out with you and have one or two glasses and make it look normal. And that doesn't mean I didn't go home when the boys were sleeping and keep drinking, right? Especially if it's up late studying. It was like my best friend, that and a cigarette, right? Which I also quit smoking as well. It became kind of my best friend because basically at the end of the day, I was also running from a lot of trauma. I had undiagnosed trauma. Trauma and addiction love each other. They go together like peanut butter and jelly, and they dance well. So what happens a lot with people I've discovered is that when you're dealing with the addiction and you're not going to the trauma, you're looking at a relapse. You might be able to deal with addiction for a minute, get them sober for a minute, or away from their drug of choice for a minute. But if you don't go to the root, you don't go to that trauma, and then assess for it, and then appropriately treat it, and that's where the painful stuff comes, learning to lean into that pain. That's how you're going to have a successful recovery, right? And that's why I love to say that I went from the identified problem in my family, friends, and community, people who knew me close, to the identified possibility. And that's why on every single one of my interviews, I talk about addiction, because we have to have this conversation. Because the guilt and the shame that us addicts carry is kneecapping. It's like what we carry with us is kneecapping and will keep us in our disease unless we can have conversations about it and educate people about it. And not just the person going through it, but the family and the communities around the person struggling in their disease, right? So understanding is a big part of it. So for me, and again, I just believe in my heart that me getting this gig on Big Sky Thursday night, 10 p.m. Did you see ABC? Did you see that plug? Shameless. Me getting this gig has a lot to do with my sobriety. I think it has everything to do with that. I was very scared to get sober because I didn't know how not to be in my disease. Because that's all you know, right? And by the way, addiction is whack-a-mole. Before alcohol, it was sex. Before that, it was food. Before that, it was love addiction. Before that, It was never drugs, but trust me, had I had them available, I probably would have done that too, excessiveness, right? Mm-hmm. But the beauty of it is that if we have the conversations and people like me show you what recovery can look like and the possibilities and how you can actually inspire people. I mean, who thinks of recovery as an inspirational person? Usually you don't put those together, right? It's usually, oh my God, the poor girl, the poor guy, or the poor they are struggling not to use meth or alcohol or whatever. It's like, no. If you're in the right recovery, it should be inspirational. And that does not mean we don't have hard days. You bet we do. But guess what? Normies have hard days too. So, right?
Right. And so who do you owe it all to? The therapy that you got or the treatment plan you got on?
I'm going to say it was timing. Everybody likes to talk about your bottom. Everyone wants to know, what was it exactly, Dee, that made you hit your bottom? You know what my answer is? I hit a lot of bottoms. Ask anybody who's in their disease. You hit a lot of bottoms on your journey of trying to quit. I got tired of feeling like a failure. I tried to quit. It's very successful at it. 9 months, 2 kids at breastfeeding. I didn't drink. I didn't drink during those times. So I was like, well, I can't be an alcoholic. I went like all that time without drinking. That's not the, but see, you have to also understand what a high functioning alcoholic really means, right? What it looks like. Bottom line is, how's your life look? Are you really happy? Are you fully your authentic self all the time? And I had to say no. And after my first year, in my after my first year of being in my master's program was really intense. And I started to look for 800 numbers on the TV. I started seeing 1-800, you know, addiction, call and you can be anonymous. I knew I was ready when I was looking at that and wanted to pick up the phone. And I would say, tomorrow I will do it. So there was, I was ready. I just didn't know how to ask for help because I felt like a failure. And like all addicts, I was riddled with shame. I was just riddled with shame. And at that same time, my family came to me and said, we'd like to do an intervention with you. And I went, I know, tell me that's not crazy. And I said, you don't have to. You don't have to. I'm ready. Just help me with the boys and I'll go. And that's what happened. I went to Breathe Life Healing Center in LA, which people fly in from other states to go to. And it was phenomenal. I went an intensive 30-day. No, didn't see my kids, my family, nobody, no phone, no computers for 30 days with 30 other addicts. And it changed my life. And to this day, I'm friends with them.
Amazing.
And I
amazing.
Just dedicate. So my degree went like even more. I have the degrees and the book learning and the A's in the classes, but I have life experience now. I can share with people to say, I promise you, you're not alone. And that's exciting to me because I now don't feel alone when I'm, you know what I mean? Like I know other people out there struggle with the same shit that I do. And that helps a lot. It really does. We need people.
Wow.
Right?
I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
It's so interesting that your rock bottom, like you said, was more like a bumpy path or a lot of bottoms because then you didn't need an intervention. You kind of came to it on your own, but the fact that then your family backed you up, and that's such an exciting like recipe for your success.
Yeah.
It all happened the correct way.
Yeah, exactly. I do have to say that I think that Mother Earth has a lot to do with it. A lot of people are religious and they would say they're God. And I respect that. For me, I think it's the universe shifted just enough to open up some of the possibilities, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that it's about perspective as well. I just knew that I was better than I was. And I just, and it's hard. I mean, my dad's a really tough German man. We didn't ask for help. Remember back in my days when I was born in the 60s, okay, and raised in the 70s and 80s, when you went through a traumatic anything and got up and said, didn't hurt and move on, that was awesome. In my family's book, that was, look at her, man. She just went through something awful. She got up and went to work the next day. Yeah. That a girl. Now you're like, wait a minute.
It's so different.
I'm not saying sit in it and wallow in it and let it become yours. It is your story. You're not your story. See, because then I became my story and I was continuously this victim. And now it's like, hell no, I have a story. I am not my story. And if you let that seep in, isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
But those are words unless they go into your heart and you believe it, you know?
Well, it's just great for your boys, too, because you can have really open conversations and really guide them into manhood, you know, appropriately. And they won't be mistreating women and they won't be little shitheads.
They better not. If they do, I'll kick their asses. I mean, because that's something that I've always thought with my boys is that, you know, I've always said, hey, I'm not a perfect mom. I don't even know what that looks like. But I try every day my hardest. And when I was in my disease, I still came up short, I would have to say. Although a lot of people would say I was a great mom, I'd say no. And now they get to look at what it looks like to lean into your addiction, confront it and own it and every day slowly recover and learn to forgive yourself and other people in the same situations. It's like for me, and if God forbid they find themselves in a situation where they're having issues, right, with addiction, I'm a soft landing. Their mom is a soft landing.
That's a nice way to put it.
Right? Because I can't keep them from being an addict. I can't. And trust me, I'd love to, but I can't. But I can be a soft landing. And I've always said that. I'm a soft landing.
So what was the trauma that you ended up realizing at the end of the day?
Girl, you know, it's funny. I could sit here and say it was this or that. But when I actually confronted my trauma, which I thought was one thing, maybe two, when I actually went to rehab and got sober and really did some pranayama, we did body work, we did, you know, trauma-focused CBT, a lot of stuff.
Attacking. What's that, trauma-focused CBT?
Well, CBT is cognitive behavioral therapy. You know, it's the triad. You think something, you feel something, and it behaves. Be mindful of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you dealing with the trauma, you gotta, for in this rehab I went to, we did pranayama, which was a pranayama, yeah, where it's deep, deep body work where the trauma actually is in your body. It's not just in your thoughts. It's in your body. So when you tap into it, it's really painful. But let me tell you, it's freeing. And I did a lot of that while I was there. And what I discovered is I've had trauma riddled throughout my life. So to say it's one thing would be not accurate. Because I think what happens as a child somewhere along the line, you get traumatized. Whereas you have four kids in a family and an incident happens, maybe three are fine, but one of them is left with some wounds. And they were never talked about, never addressed. They seep inside, become part of the fabric of your personality. And then you continue to get traumatized throughout your life because it's what you know. Mm-hmm. Right? It's a familiar feeling.
It's what's comfortable. Yeah.
Right? So, yeah. I mean, think about a soldier. They go to battle and they're all in, say, one battle. And that group comes home. Some of them will go on with very productive lives. And some will be really suffering with PTSD. Same battle. Same situation, right? But some end up with PTSD from that. And others, you know, don't.
Well, but also growing up in a family with multiple children, like I'm the youngest of six, and I definitely am the black sheep or the person, the identified person who is the problem. I am definitely the identified problem. So maybe that was part of it, right? So if you were the youngest, and are you the youngest of
the
four?
Middle. I'm actually
in the middle.
Middle.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, that has its own set of problems.
I know. I'm a people pleaser.
But I'm just saying that, like, all of that, you know, so like the year you were born, what was happening in the world, you know, it's very Malcolm Gladwell, but to bring it really out there, it depends on everything, where you were born, the year, and the date and the time of day, and everything adds up. And if you were the middle of a family of four and maybe not getting the attention you thought you would, or
always overlooked.
So therefore, therefore that's your comfort level to be overlooked. Yeah. I know what you're saying.
Yeah. It's so you get situations. Yeah, exactly. The middle child, always people pleasing and all that kind of stuff. Hey, they're fighting like crazy with Michelle because she was definitely the squeaky wheel growing up. And I'm like, Mom, look, I just rearranged the rumpus room and I cleaned it. They're like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Well, there's only so much time, you know.
Can we all get along, please? You know, please. Yeah. I was always that person, you know.
Well, I was not always, but I've said on my show how when my father left our family, my mother had nothing, you know, she was just devastated, right? So after 27 years of marriage, he splits and she's just devastated. And back then in the early 80s, there wasn't therapy, or there was, but it wasn't as accessible. And a lot of people didn't even get divorced to begin with. So my mother had that one book called Passages by Cale Sheehy. Mm. And that was it. There was like one book in the whole decade of help. And you got to get your hands on that or you got nothing.
Yeah.
It was so bizarre.
It's interesting you say that because, like, my mom had mental issues in the 50s. So she had shock treatments because that's how they dealt with it back then. So she'd already had Michelle and Rick. Michelle, I think, was a year old. And then 4 years later, she had me and then my little sister, Lori. So it's like Michelle and Rick had one mother pre-shock treatments. And then Lori and I came post-shock treatments. I ended up doing a paper on shock treatments my first year of college because it was very interesting what happened to my mother. And that's some sad stuff right there.
Yeah.
And we'll never really know what my mom really was because they zapped her until she felt better. Right. And she had 10 minutes of therapy a week. But, you know, and I was very angered for a long time. Now I look back and I understand that they're just trying to figure it out. It's very barbaric. Yeah. A lot of things back then were very barbaric.
It is,
you know?
So barbaric. You know, they just came up with chemotherapy in the 50s as well.
Yeah.
And can you imagine when they first started giving it? I mean, it's bad enough we still have to give it. But, I mean, talk about, you know, using poison to eradicate. Ugh.
Yeah.
We've come a long way, thank God.
We really have.
And we're lucky. Like, I have a 14-year-old, and I know you said one of your boys is only 15.
15 and 19.
Yeah. So, but I'm just saying the 15, you know, we still have, we can help them. We can mold them. We can give them information and mm-hmm. have these open conversations. So at least there's a lot of people, I think, like us raising kids now and have been in the last several decades.
Yeah.
So I think that that table is turning. And I don't think, hopefully, the sexual harassment won't nearly be what it was in our era.
I have to tell you, the new generation, I feel, are so far ahead of us in our generation. And I tell you right now, just even one of my sons, a 19-year-old, I mean, he's MMA and secondary black belt and all that. But yet he has zero tolerance for anybody mistreating women. Like, literally, like, I've had to say, Braxton, you will go to jail. And you're a black belt. You are not allowed. He's like, but when his girlfriends say a guy, you know, did anything, he loses. He sees red like a pit bull. And I have to pull him back. And this is that all of his friends are like that.
Good.
Zero tolerance for treating anybody with disrespect, especially women. But, you know,
That's good news. That's good news.
Yeah. I think the majority of the new generation is like that, because that's what you need. Not all of them. You're never going to get the entire United States to agree on anything other than, well, anyways, one day UFOs, but that's a long story. but if you can get the majority on board on one topic, that is huge. And I think this new generation is very socially conscious. I think they're environmentally conscious. I think that, you know, yeah. I mean,
and also, like, you're talking about recovery and mental health. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of this has to just be talked about like a regular muscle. Like, you work out at the gym, you got to work out your mental issues as well. Everybody should be able to just talk about it and get it out in the open, because nobody as perfect as their life might seem. Nobody has their shit together.
Well, exactly. Even, like I say, normies,
everybody is scattered. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we call those who can, like, have one glass of wine, we call y'all like a normie. Like, who drinks one glass of wine? Or here's what I hate. Who drinks half a glass and leaves the other half there? Like, if you're in recovery or you're an addict,
person.
You look and go, why aren't you finishing that? That was a perfectly happy hour glass of wine. I would never leave that behind. So, but even those people who are normies have other issues. So I think that if we're looking for perfection, you're not going to get it. If you're looking for all the way left or all the way right, that doesn't make any sense either. It's the balance of things. Moderation.
Yes.
We got to swim and play in the middle of things. And
I think, agree.
Yeah, that's me. I try that every day. Some days the pendulum swings and I have to be mindful of it. Yeah, no, and that's okay. Long as I don't drink, right?
Yep.
It's okay. It'll be okay. You know what I mean? And that's the same thing I tell anybody who's doing anything, meth or whatever their drug of choice is. It's okay. As long as you show up today. Show up means just don't use. Even if it's a shitty day, that's okay. Just don't use and you're still ahead of the game. Right?
Yeah. Wow, that's great. You are an inspiration. Thank you, Dee Dee Pfeiffer.
Thank you.
This has been so much fun. Do you come out to LA then or not?
Right now we're in New Mexico. And
I know, but do you have a house here, or do you ever come here?
Well, I live there.
Oh, you do have a house here. Okay, you do live in LA.
Well, I did, but...
No, I know, but now you're shooting and COVID and everything else.
Yeah, and I let my rental go because my 19-year-old said, I love you, I'm not going to New Mexico with you. So he moved out. When I came here, I had my very first one fly out of the nest, and he's like, peace out, Mom. I love it.
Then you did a good job. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah, right? Well, we'll see. Yeah, he's still like, Mom. I'm like, okay, I'll buy you a pizza.
He still brings his laundry over, sure.
Well, in New Mexico. So he moved out in Los Angeles. My 15-year-old's here with me and my Rottweiler cat and cockatoo in New Mexico. Everything's in storage.
Yeah.
So we're really.
You're in between.
Yeah, absolutely. So when this season ends, I'll have to figure out where we're going to land.
Sure.
Because the country right now is crazy.
And I real estate, you don't have to tell me.
It's nuts, girl. What's going on out there?
You don't have
My
to tell me.
My son and I are sitting here trying to figure it out. Like,
it's out of control.
Rent is high and everything is so expensive.
It's really wild right now. It is, for sure. But if I were you, I'd come back to LA because, boy, oh, boy, at the end of the day, the weather, I mean, I'm sorry. It just really trumps everything. It just does.
Yeah,
sorry.
But I want goats. Okay.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I want baby goats and chickens.
All right. I bet we can make that happen. There's some yards. you're going to make that happen. You'll see. All right, you guys. Listen, follow Dee Dee over there on Instagram @DeeDeePfeifferOfficial.
Yes.
And then follow Storyworthy over there as well @Storyworthy. And don't forget to follow my game show Story Smash as well. And that's what I was getting at, Dee Dee, is that when you are back in LA, I hope my game show is happening, because you would be a fantastic judge. You would be so funny.
I would love to. You'd be amazing.
We'll have to figure that out.
Yes.
All right, you guys.
Call Turkey, my publicist. Yes, my publicist is named Turkey.
That's right. It is Turk. I thought his name is Anthony Turk, but you call him Turkey.
You bet I do. You don't get to have a name like Turk and not be called Turkey.
That
come on.
Is so funny. That's so funny. I didn't know if it was first name or last name, and then I read it. And anyway, that's funny. Anyway, hi, Turk. Hi.
Hi, Turk. They pitched you.
All right, you guys. One more time on behalf of the very talented Dee Dee Pfeiffer. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I had a great time. Thank you.
Yay. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
This episode is also sponsored by Zelle. Zelle is a great way to send money to family and friends no matter where they bank in the U.S. right from your banking app. Personally, I always use Zelle to pay my barber, and I use it to send him a little bit extra because, I mean, he's really getting in that scalp and he does a really good job, and he's kind of got to wash out all those little tiny short hairs, and if you don't wash them out, then you're itchy for the rest of the day. I don't know. I feel like he deserves a little bit extra for that. It goes straight into the recipient's bank account in minutes between enrolled users. You can use it for all kinds of stuff, not just to pay your barber for putting up with you. You can send some money to your friend for his birthday because you forgot it. So if you're listening, Brian, sorry, buy yourself something nice. The best part about Zelle is you probably already have it since it's in over 1,000 banking apps. So look for Zelle in your banking app today.